Mark Fitnock is a Victorian-trained aerospace engineer from Monash University who was involved in NASA's recent InSight Mars mission. InSight, interior exploration using seismic investigations, geodesy and heat transport, is the first robotic explorer to study the interior structure of Mars. Mark's creation, Susanna, is the probe which burrowed 5 metres below the surface. So Mark Fitnock is an Australian space engineer who moved to Europe in 2007 to pursue his passion for space. He began at the German Aerospace Centre, running a program to launch student experiments on rockets and balloons, which is pretty damn exciting. There he also developed and built the surface segment for the DLR HP3 experiment for NASA's InSight mission, a digging probe that landed on Mars at the end of November 2018. Mark currently works at OHB in Bremen. OHB is Germany's largest satellite manufacturer.
Second largest.
Is Airbus the other one? Yeah, we won't mention them.
Just give us a bit of time.
As project manager and systems engineer on future exploration and science missions, including ESA's HERA mission that shall investigate the effect of impacting asteroids as part of the joint NASA-ESA asteroid impact and detection assessment studies. As I introduced him, so we have Dr. Rebecca Allen from Swinburne University. Rebecca completed her PhD in astrophysics at Swinburne University of Technology. Galaxies are enormous structures that contain vast amounts of stars, planets, dust, gas, and even mysterious dark matter. Dr. Allen's research focuses on understanding how galaxies grow and evolve with time, going all the way back to when the universe was barely a billion years old. To comprehend how these giant systems change with time, she uses data from telescopes across the world and even the Hubble Space Telescope. When she's not studying galaxies, she uses her expertise and enthusiasm to communicate the wonders of the universe to others and create unique learning experiments for students or experiences. Some of her recent efforts in this area include school engagement for Swinburne's Centre for Astrophysics and Supercomputing and public engagement for National Science Week through the virtual astronomy experience, SciVR. She even gets to help secondary students design, build and program their own. Our other panellist, Matthew Bricali. Matthew is a passionate aerospace research and development engineer in the field of rocket and high-speed air-breathing propulsion. He currently works as a research fellow and team lead with RMIT on a cooperative research centre project that aims to develop the next generation propulsion technologies for high-speed aircraft. Prior to this role, Matthew worked as the propulsion system analyst with the orbital rocket startup Rocket Lab during the research and development stage of the Electron launch vehicle. And I think a lot of people know about Rocket Lab, the exciting New Zealand company with their own launch facilities, launching payloads into space. It's been amazing what they've achieved in such a short space of time. And I think also the New Zealand government has a lot to be thanked for or congratulated on in making that happen. So we look forward to seeing the same in Australia. In his role, he helped to refine and optimise Rutherford rocket engine's main propulsion components, such as the main combustion chamber, regenerative cooling systems, electro pumps, injectors and nozzles extension. It's all exciting stuff. I love this. This work was recently recognised with the Rocket Lab propulsion team, of which Matthew was named, being awarded the 2018 Royal Aeronautical Society Gold Medal for contributions to innovation, art and science. To date, Rocket Lab have had 3 successful missions that have delivered payload into low Earth orbit. Matthew holds a PhD conferred by the University of Queensland Centre for Hypersonics. Matthew also teaches the subject of thermofluids and propulsion at RMIT. So a round of applause again, and thank you for joining the panel. It's not hard to see why space is exciting when I get to read out these bios and see presentations like this. So I would like to start the panel discussion. The topic is pretty much focusing on Australia, Victoria's involvement in this exciting space industry that's opening up before us. We've just founded an Australian space agency. I think it was announced at the IAC in Adelaide last year. It's officially started on July 1 this year. Its aim, one of its goals, is to triple the size of the industry. as it currently stands. So space industry covers a broad range of topics, but generally people speak about the upstream segment and the downstream segment. We've got the space segment where we actually create the infrastructure, the assets that go into space. We've got the downstream aspect of the space industry, and that is pretty much the processing of all the data from those space assets, but also when it comes to astrophysics and exploring galaxies, there's also the big data and artificial intelligence involved in that. So our three panellists are going to clearly and concisely explain everything about not just Australia, but also how the rest of the planet's going to make the most of this opportunity. So if I'll just ask the panel members, you've got a microphone there, if you can just share that amongst yourselves. If you can just make an opening statement about your thoughts on Australia establishing a space agency and what implications that would imply, and what should Australia do to make sure we follow through on all that amazing enthusiasm?
So I think one of the great things I've not noticed, but it's been hammered home on this trip back to Australia for myself, is the Australian passion for space. And the space agency, I think, is one component of that. Now to have that as a central organisational body to help work on building the space industry within Australia, I think that passion that Australians have for space and space endeavours is that thing that will really begin the push to drive forward. And the next step will be investment in technology, investment in people, and investment in missions in the future.
My thoughts are the space agency will provide a means to coordinate with other space agencies around the world and allow collaboration to happen on a formal government level. I think that's fantastic, and that's really what it's there to do, and to spur the private sector to, you know, develop companies such as Rocket Lab within Australia. I think Australia should have some national goals, and they shouldn't just be the downstream applications, but also the upstream. So maybe looking at developing our own satellites here, maybe looking at launch later on. I'm not sure what comes first, but we should definitely be setting some goals.
So I certainly think, in my experience and being here part of this talk today, Australia has the talent to be a leader in the space industry, but also you have the infrastructure. And as an astronomer, you know, we get to see the Parkes Radio Telescope, which in its history, you know, has been fundamental in telemetry and tracking satellites, but also monitoring the very first mission to another planet, Mariner 2, and tracking the Voyager spacecraft as they leave our solar system. So space industries across the world have been using, you know, your technology. And so now I think it's time to really capitalize on that and, you know, be part of what's going on with the data that's coming from satellites, but then also to be using your brain power for Australia and not to be taking that to other countries. There's nothing wrong with collaboration. You know, you can still go to Germany or even JPL in America, but I think it's important to have your own representation here in Australia.
Yeah, we've got some significant assets in Australia when it comes to astronomy. And I think with the Square Kilometre Array as well, we're world leading in that space. We were on the cutting edge and the forefront of space in terms of launching assets into space, but we seem to have lost a leading position there. But it looks like with all the advancements in the technology now, CubeSats, nanosats, so we've got an opportunity to get back into it. So maybe Mark, I'd like to ask you, because you've also got that global experience, what should the space agency do to help others follow a path that you've followed?
There's certainly something that can be done immediately, I think, is looking in terms of that younger generation of engineers and scientists, if we're going to be a little bit more broad about it. So things like mobility grants, helping them to move around and gain the experience that they can bring back, be it short term or longer term, that's certainly something that can be done today. That's something that a lot of universities are looking at, some certainly work on already very intensely. That's something that the Space Agency can support and really build upon.
I think all the panel members tonight have extensive experience outside of Australia. And personally, I also believe sending our young talent to live and work overseas in these organisations adds value back to Australia in terms of the networks developed and also the projects that they will bring back with them eventually once they come back home. So I don't know about yourself, Matthew, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I just want to ditto Mark's opinion. I personally spent 1 year in exchange at an aerospace and space university in Europe as well, and I think that's critical. It's working with the best, looking outward, and then bringing that expertise back to Australia.
When I was actually recently in Pasadena, I got to have a tour of JPL from the former manager of the Micro Devices Lab. And actually, I also got to see some of the robotics labs. And two people I spoke to there, one of them worked with RoboSimeon, which is, you know, trying to develop this really autonomous, you know, technology where if we're sending a robot to a moon off Saturn or Jupiter, we can't say, oops, like, don't go down there or take a left turn. It's got to be able to figure this stuff out. Well, he was from Australia. And so I think part of it is, you know, having experience at different industries, but also I don't want somebody to have to go to America or Europe if they really want to work in space industry. I think it's also about providing opportunities here as well. And I think the universities are doing a really good job of that now.
I was just going to point out, it's a fun fact, at Rocket Lab, I think 50% of the staff were Australian when I was there.
But it's a New Zealand company.
Yeah. US.
Oh, okay. Mark, did you want to add a comment or?
Have a natural grip on.
Yeah.
Are there any questions? We can have some questions from the floor if you'd like to ask the panel. Okay, do we have the roving mic?
You mentioned at the beginning that there's 2,000 people currently employed in the space industry in Australia. I think that would surprise most people sitting here. My question is to the panel, where are they?
I guess I'm the wrong one to answer that one since I was the one who left, so I'll pass that on.
I've been thinking about this and My theory is that a lot of it is in procurement of overseas. I don't know. It's all that downstream analysis, I suppose, ground station stuff.
It is exactly in that satellite monitoring and developing ground stations. But I think a lot of that is also an outlook into the numbers of people that will be employed here as well in those sectors.
Yeah. I'd also reinforce those comments in that, as I mentioned before, you've got your upstream side of space industry and downstream side. Where we are world leading and the majority of the jobs are pretty much on the downstream side, getting access to that imagery from space, communications, GPS, positioning, accuracy, that's where the majority of those jobs are. Who writes these media releases and what they think, I'd be asking them to explain the exact breakdown of that 2,300, but I think the majority is downstream. But we're increasing the jobs on the upstream and building equipment at an exponential rate.
That's where it comes back to a national goal. Is there a desire to develop our own indigenous satellite that is bigger than a CubeSat, maybe something on the order of 150 kilos to serve Australia's interests instead of getting data from other nations?
Look, Australia is also 0.3% of the world population. You know, that means 99.7% of any activity is outside of Australia, and we just do not have the population base and economy to be able to fund these space agencies that, you know, the US, ESA, Europe, Germany, China can fund. So naturally they're going to generate the majority of the jobs, but as we've already heard from some of the panel members, I think it's quite easy for Australians to embed themselves in these organisations, as I have myself, and I place my students. I'm at La Trobe University Engineering Department. I've worked in Germany. I've worked for the German Aerospace Centre, pretty much still do, and I place my students to work there because they have infrastructure we do not have, and we've got talent. We've got heaps of talent, and why tell them you cannot leave our borders? I say let them go, let them have these experiences, develop those connections and bring back, you know, pretty much that brain gain. It's not a brain drain. There's only so much Australia can underpin in terms of being a space-faring nation building probes like InSight.
I do just want to jump on the keyword there with the economy. And one thing that is really important for Australia, as outlined in the World Economic Forum's report, is what kind of products does Australia export? And, you know, really on in terms of technology, there, you know, Australia is posed to be able to produce amazing technology. I mean, look at CSIRO, but it's just not happening at the rate that you see in other countries. And I think having your own space agency will help, you know, push some of that forward. And that's critical for Australia's economy moving forward.
Excellent question. Another question from the gentleman in the dark green shirt.
Hi, my name's Keith. I'm a student studying aerospace engineering at Monash. So, respect. My question comes really stems from one of your statements before that you said, Mark, about what the Australian Space Agency can do for students. On the other side, what can students do for Australia right now to help sort of explore and expand that sort of excitement for the space industry?
Well, that's a pretty tough question, I think. So one of the things I've noticed, I was out at Monash last week and visiting the Nova Rover team, and they're doing some fantastic work there. These are the sort of things that, to be honest, didn't exist when I studied. There's the high power rocketry team. So these sort of things have just grown from looking back at a bunch of people in a park launching off little rockets, and now they're doing quite serious engineering work towards the space field. And to be honest, that's good. We notice, so to say, as a somebody who's overseas. Looking back, we're seeing skills coming from young engineers, from people who are still students, that we weren't seeing as much before. And I think working on those practical experiments or practical projects, starting to understand what the life cycle of a space mission is like, if you're talking about spacecraft or an experiment, these sort of skills are really useful, and you can build them as a student. And so, as students, supporting those projects, getting involved in those projects, and finding those opportunities is a great first step.
Okay, one more question.
Hi, I'm Alex. And just in regards to the economics problem you were talking about before, why couldn't Australia just focus on what we're good at? So you said our exports. I can see that we are quite good at mining, and our exports in that are insane worldwide. So why can't we focus on that as sort of like a stopgap? To just reduce the amount of pressure that is inherent in all the missions and research that we have to do for a mission?
That's a very complicated question, and the answer is right now that is what Australia is doing. But you can't depend on minerals forever, and you know some of these resources are finite, and it costs a lot of money to mine them. And the thing is, when you're looking at it in economic perspective, that's a single product. You're just putting out one material. And so when you have a more advanced product, ultimately your economy is going to do better because you're putting out more than just materials. And I think that's related also to the fact that Australia's an intelligent population. Like we've been talking about, we have all this talent. You can do more than mining. And that's what the world is looking for. And they're waiting for Australia to come forward.
Also spin-offs from, you know, space, in other sectors, so it's a great investment into your talented engineers and young people that can then spin off into other sectors that are more profitable, like mining.
And even using stuff in mining.
Yeah. Mining is quite challenging. I mean, there's lots of technology going into that. So, and also there's the nation building aspect that you can bring into it. People enjoy hearing about space and makes them feel happy, which may make them more productive. So there's many implicit benefits.
Yeah, I have to also add to that question. There are other nations that are heavily reliant on natural resources for generating revenue, and they've, I think, 3-4 decades ago, their government has created a sovereign fund whereby all money generated from those revenues, or a lot of it, goes into funding their knowledge economy and underpinning strategic initiatives such as investing in space and space industries. So I think Australia should have done that long ago, and we shouldn't be fighting over crumbs, which we are. And a lot of space agencies that have come to Australia in the past, you know, you have to resource your part of a mission if you want to be an official partner. the expectation is you put money on the table, and I think for too long, Australia has been having a free ride. Right, one very last question.
My name's Phil. I'm from America, so I had the opportunity to work in defense side of aerospace. But my question is, you know, we all, the space station and everything, I have concerns about resources because you're going to be fighting against frigate program, submarine program, all these other programs going on. What's your thoughts about bringing in the big boys, Raytheon, Hercules, all the firms I worked for over in the States and got a lot of technology and worked with people? Biggest thing I see here, sorry for engineers, is that is getting the opportunity to do the things. I had a lot of opportunity in the States because it was just a bigger community. What's your thoughts about the big boys and about defense?
I don't have much of a perspective on space. So one of the things for Australia, so I can talk about the science and exploration side a little bit better. It's an almost purely institutional market, and that's part of the thing about coming along with your own money, as was mentioned before. So I certainly see, and it's another company that is very active in Europe is very interested in activity in Australia. But where Australians will get more opportunities with some of those big players within the space industry is coming with some money, coming with investment, and also having the people and the technology available to take part.
Yeah, I had the opportunity a few years ago to the National Space Symposium. And so when you go there, you see space industry, but it's also Air Force and military. And what you appreciate there is that through the cooperation, you know, you're able to have all of these advances and opportunities. What I would like to challenge America, though, is to actually really look at what they're doing and use it. You know, at this talk, Bill Nye was telling them, why aren't we using more of this to address global warming and some of these big questions? And so, you know, it's this balance between profit and protecting and having, you know, this power structure, but also then using that for pure science, which, you know, I can appreciate as an astronomer, going out and having these research goals and ideas, and then you make it a reality through engineering and creation. So we want to see these things, you know, come back to the science where we continue, you know, that cycle of, you know, development.
I didn't quite understand your question. Were you asking or saying that Australia should engage with the big boys, i.e. Boeing, and bring them in to help us develop our capability? Yeah, I think what's happened in the past is it's just been all outsourced. And so I think that's absolutely fine what you're saying, but it needs to be, you know, it needs to be built in Australia, and Australian engineers need to be touching it. They need to be getting the technical skills. I think that would be the ideal scenario, right? Why do you want to reinvent the wheel when other people already have the expertise? So, yes.
Well, one very, very last question from the audience here.
I came to Australia after working for NASA, actually. I was recruited 30 years ago. And I was very disappointed to see that nobody wants to pick up Newton. I mean, the space program is not only just launching things into space. NASA has brought in a lot of products, a lot of new materials that are used in everyday life. And the Australians, I tried to introduce various technologies here, and there was very, very little interest from regular industry. And I worked at RMIT, I had a research lab, but that was all. And this was not picked up by anybody. And in general, Australia is known of not picking up inventions that were made in Australia or things like that. And one businessman told me, oh, we don't let the Americans and the Japanese develop things and we'll buy them. With this attitude, and unfortunately, it's changing, but very, very slowly. And with this attitude, it's not going to advance Australia very much.
I will, you know, say that when Von Braun first decided, you know, that we can build this rocket and we can go to the moon, there were even people in America that were like, I don't know, like that's a pretty radical idea. And I appreciate that maybe Australia hasn't been on the forefront of a lot of these technological advances. But I think with the space agency, hopefully, like that is going to be something that's kind of a catalyst to continue that. Because, I mean, you look at CSIRO and that organization, they've built some of these instruments, you know, such as the engineers for the JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, which will be Hubble's predecessor. So, follower. Yeah, thank you, successor. Wrong vocabulary word. And so, you know, there is some of that, I guess, kind of inspiration, but, you know, whether it grows and becomes a large-scale thing, I think it also has to do, I do go back to the population argument as well. That's kind of what I love about Australia coming from America, is that it is a bit different, and I don't think that's something that you guys should lose as a country. I've lived here for almost 7 years, so I could say it's kind of my home now, too. And I think there's something that is kind of important in that, too, a lesson that can be taken.
I do have a last question for Mark. It's from a secret admirer. They're a bit too embarrassed to ask the question, but you've worked in all those multicultural teams with all these individuals from numerous countries. And there's obviously been challenges with languages and different, dare I say, work ethics and approaches to getting work done. What have you learnt during your time on such missions, and what should you focus on? What are the main tips on being successful in those environments, and what do you have to look out for?
The last part might be the hardest, the what to look out for. I don't think between different cultural backgrounds you have to look out for different things. There, I try to treat everybody more or less the same. People prove themselves through hard work, proving themselves as dependable, proving themselves as honest. And that's something you can get from any cultural background. So I was ironically, or maybe not so ironically, the chatterbox in my team. I was often getting called out on the comms to button up a little. So certainly my team had to deal with some of my cultural quirks as well. And we had other team members who were very quiet. But I would like to think, especially within that core team who worked on the support system assembly, a lot of what we did is we took people with those backgrounds, maybe they be cultural or technical or experience, and fit their role to them, find the tasks that they were good at and give them to them to own them. And that was a really good way of leveraging those very different backgrounds that our team had, the different levels of experience especially. We saw both that combination of those with more experience looking after things, but also those with less growing within the project and taking on more and spreading the load within the team, until we had a really great team. We always had a really great team, but it only got better and better building towards the end of the project. And it was a team I'm very proud to have worked together with.